Why is the shopping cart always in the top right of the screen?
How do companies predict my purchases?
Why do prices end in 9?
Why do fast food companies use red and yellow in their logos?
Why do restaurants always have one expensive menu item?
Researchers, marketers, and very curious people seek the answers for how we make decisions and how we choose products. ClickSuasion finds the secrets that companies use and shares them with you.
Why do I feel better when I bought the last remaining airline ticket?
How do I make choices based on colors and fonts?
All right, welcome to the top 6 consumer marketing trends for 2021 and a few years beyond. I'm Michael Barbera, Chief Behavioral Officer at ClickSuasion Labs. There are 6 trends we're going to share with you today based upon research at ClickSuasion Labs. Hopefully, at least a few of these apply to your businesses, and then you can apply them to your branding, marketing, communication, and of course, employee engagement. All right, so there's a significant availability bias from 2020. We had this perception that 2020 ends and everything goes back to normal. It quite didn't work out like that, and I hope not everyone was expecting for everything to go back to normal on January 1 either. But the events of 2020 hold this significant weight towards 2021 and beyond. So however, the 6 predictions that we're going to share with you today, although these have been expected over the next 3 to 5 years, the events of 2020 and the COVID-19 pandemic have accelerated these earlier than expected. The 3 RQs or research questions that we asked ourselves when conducting the study or combining several studies into this presentation was 1, what are the top marketing predictions for 2021 and beyond? What are the implications for the chief marketing officer? And what is the CMO imperative right now and beyond? And so the 6 consumer or the top 6 trends that we're going to talk about, 1, being home-centric, having a hybrid lifestyle, employee leadership or employee advocacy, magnifying Main Street, alternative income or the side hustle, and then overt consumption. All right, so when the 307 participants were asked, when do you think life in the US will, in some case, get back to normal? Most answers came around the same, but where we noticed some trends is that if you look at the low household income, the medium household income, and the high household income, you can see there's some changes between those with high annual household income and those with low annual household income. Additionally, there's another 2 other groups, 1, the multicultural group, and then followed by the political ideology on the far right-hand side for those who self-report as conservative or self-report as liberal. And so by looking at how we self-report ourselves by annual household income, by our culture and by our political ideology, we fall into a segment of the population who believes that things will get back to normal by a different time period. All right, so let's look at some emotions. So what we have here is a 10-year historical outlook on emotions of being safe and afraid, being trustful and distrustful, and then being alone. And all right, so when looking at these emotions, although it's a 10-year outlook, what we have here is we included 2019 into the middle. So we have 2010 through 2020 for each of these emotions. But what's significant is we dropped 2019 into the middle to identify, to show the 1-year change from 2019 to 2020. Although we look at, say, being safe to afraid 2010 to 2019, there was an increase, more people are likely to be afraid in their emotions, but then look at the significant increase from 2019 to 2020. And then you have the same pattern for trustful and distrustful, and then included and being alone. All right, so the first of the 6 top consumer trends we talk about is being home-centric. Home is where we are. Home is where hopefully quarantine is. And so we want to, we value what we have and we want to improve it. So let's take a look at some studies for how consumers engaged with their homes during the COVID-19 pandemic. So first, these are changes made or planned to be changed to indoor or outdoor spaces due to the pandemic. Now, if you look at The top four, or the four items that are above 26%, which are adding or expanding gardens or landscapes, redecorating one or more rooms, adding outdoor furniture, or adding or expanding outdoor spaces, each of these, or three or four of these, are outdoor related. So although we are stuck in quarantine, we have a desire to, we as North Americans, as consumers, have a desire to improve our outdoor spaces, improve our living spaces, and give us and our families the best possible quarantine experience that we can. All right, so when asked, living through this pandemic will likely have a lasting impact on the way I think about my home and how I manage it. All right, 26% believe that they neither agree or disagree, but then if we look at a significant number, if we look at anything that's either neutral or agree or somewhat agree, that's 72% of participants in a study of more than 1,300 participants agree that it's either neutral or agree or completely agree. So most people are trending to or skewing to that the pandemic has had a lasting impact on the way that I or we manage our home. All right, so when we talk about being home-centric, first, the behaviors that we've engaged in, although we are changing our behaviors, we still want to get access to certain items, certain experiences. Those will not change. The behaviors of what we need or want have not changed. However, the way in which we seek or search or fulfill that need has changed through the last year and is likely to continue to change over time. Although we are creatures of habit, change is difficult, but we'll still find ways to meet that need, even if it's not a complete new behavior. As in what we can do today to be home-centric, number one, message framing for your consumers. Let's talk to our customers about being comfortable, giving them security, giving them control. Consumers or North Americans love to feel in control. We don't want to lose it, hence why a large segment of the population does not want to quarantine, are anti-vaccine, or are venturing out into the public. And that's a natural behavior because we want to feel like we're in control of our own lives, our own destiny. So if we create our message framing to give the customer or make the customer feel like they're in control, they're safe, they're secure, and they're at least in control of their environment, then you're more likely to have a positive brand experience with your customers. And then let's look at hybrid experiences. By 2023, many brands that pivoted to virtual events or conferences over the last year will have some type of integration between real time and virtual engagement in the same activity. So let's break down what that exactly means. Consumers have adopted digital tools to move through life in a convenient and safer way. So here's the percentage of customers who have done each a hybrid behavior since the pandemic started. And what hybrid behavior would be defined as something that is both digital and tangible. You're maybe visiting a museum, but instead of having a tour guide, you're using your phone with a QR code to view and engage with certain pieces of the museum. That would be an example of hybrid behavior. So what we've found was in a study of more than 1,300 participants, about 45% of the participants have engaged in at least one hybrid behavior since the pandemic started in the United States. More significantly, 25% have used an app to check store inventory. This is partly where the grocery disruption comes in play. Whereas grocery disruption wasn't expected to happen until 2023, 2024, the pandemic definitely accelerated our desire to have our groceries delivered, to shop online. Hence, we have Instacart and Instacart's competitors as well. If we look down, let's go down to the watch parties. So we have 8% stated that they remotely watched a video together with someone else. In the start of the pandemic, usually this was screen sharing, maybe on Zoom with a peer, a colleague, a friend, a relative, a loved one, and then maybe sharing a screen together or watching a YouTube video together. This has merged into watch parties. So now most streaming apps now offer watch parties where you and a participant or someone else can watch the same activity together from two separate locations. And then below it at 6%, 6% said they had a virtual chat or video call with a brand representative. So for those who work in customer service, this is a significant item to look at, because most customer service is either chat-based or it is voice-based. Very little customer service has been video-based, and for partial reasons. Number one, it's taxing. It's resource intensive for brands. And number two, as we try to roll it out going forward, there's been a lot of taxation on Zoom or Zoom platforms, where video conferencing, video chat has been taxing on many people since the start of the pandemic, where we have that Zoom fatigue, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. However, if a brand is able to incorporate a video customer service chat with their brand in an easy, convenience manner that's not taxing on the customer, this is an area where we believe many brands can capitalize on the customer service experience. All right, so talking about hybrid experiences, what we found, what it means, and what you should do. So again, the same behavior, new medium, new channel. And although Zoom is not the future, Zoom fatigue is real. And yes, we're using Zoom for this chat right now. With that being said, even us at ClickSuasion Labs, we're starting to use or test a new platform for webinars that's integrated with the ClickSuasion brand. So we fully recognize that Zoom fatigue is there. Most people are burnt out by Zoom or video conference, and therefore we're ready to move on to separate platforms. And then what we should do is two things. Number one, look at the entire or 360 customer experience. Number two, look at the customer effort. How much effort is required for the customer to get their question answered? How much effort is required for the customer to make a purchase? How much effort is required for the customer to get to X, Y, or Z? That's the number of clicks, the length of time waiting on hold, the length of time waiting in line, the drive between point A and point B. So effort is a significant driver of customer behavior. And us as consumers, we love convenience, safe, comfort, and we like to trust those brands who give us an easy time to engage with things we want and need. All right, so employee activism, this is another item that wasn't expected until 2023, 2024, but we're expecting next year that most organizations are going to have a larger budget for their publicity and communication teams, because employees want their voice heard. Employees, yes, they are an extension of the brand of their employer, and vice versa. It's a two-way street. So employees want to be heard. They want their want to advocate for what they believe is right, and that is going to have either a positive or adverse effect on the brand that they're employed by. So when looking at a study, when employees were asked, which of these two statements do you agree with? The most, statement A, I strive to incorporate my personality into my work, or statement B, I try to keep my work self and my personal self separate. What we found is most people lean towards the statement B. They try to keep it separate. But then as we look at, it should be another chart here for age, because we look at the younger generation, pretty much those 34 and younger lean towards, they see it as they incorporate it together. So the older generation, Generation X and older, are likely to believe that there's two separate persons. There's the work person and the me person. And then the younger than Gen X believe that there's one single person. We're an extension of our brand, and vice versa. All right, so what does this mean, and what can we do about it? So notable brands have been impacted, yet this is not limited to notable brands. Whether it's a large brand of 5,000 employees, a regional brand of 400 employees, or a small business with 10 employees, this affects every business individually, because employees do want to have their voice heard, and employees have a significant reach. Employees of a brand have just as much as a reach as the brand does. If the employee can go on to a social media platform and share a comment, an opinion, the brand can do it as well. So the voices are semi-equal. All right, so employees have indirect influence into consumer decision-making, and many customers want to engage with brands who have similar thought processes, similar political ideologies, and similar thoughts on social activism and social responsibility. And then what we can do about it is create some talking points. This is an area where, unfortunately, most brands become reactive. We start to think about this and create a plan once it's already too late, and then we're reacting to journalists, to journalist requests, et cetera. So create talking points in advance. Share the talking points with your employees, with those who are responsible for advocating for the brand, those in the communication and HR teams, to address those talking points as needed when they arise, or potentially before they arise, and be as proactive as possible. Now, let's talk about magnifying Main Street. The Main Street catalyst started with the pandemic as product availability, as larger brands had difficulty filling shelves, difficult time with their logistics platforms. Most consumers shifted to a product availability mindset, whereas, okay, I am loyal to X brand, but Y brand has the product available, so I'm going to shop with Y brand. And we started to move away from those we felt loyal to, those who we know and like and trust, because someone else had product availability. And that's where the magnified Main Street came from. And although on this next slide we can see that much of the product availability variable has decreased at the end of 2020 towards the holiday season, it's still there. It's still significant. And what's also significant is that the magnifying Main Street is there as well. Something else we look at as well is we look at the black line, which is one of our concerns as North Americans, neighborhood shops going out of business. North Americans in general are typically not community centric. We focus on family first, then country, then community. And so what we're seeing here is a trend that's not normal for North America, or at least the United States. And we're showing that more people are caring about their local community and wanting to help small businesses, medium-sized businesses stay in business and keep the community together. What's also notable on here is we look at the not only product availability, but people acting in ways that are not at interest of the community. So this is what scares people. This line spiked in April and then kind of flatlined through the end of the year. Although we expect that this line is likely to increase around August or September or Q3, Q4 of this year. And the reason for that is we predict that once the majority of the North American population is vaccinated, that this will become a significant interest. So people believe that those who are not vaccinated are putting others at risk or in harm's way. So looking at the big picture exchange between big brands and small businesses, where do customers believe the responsibility lies? Who is better at doing what? And so we have some categories here being customer service and experience, creating internal policies, community and contribution, safety, value for money, price, and technology and logistics. So out of a study of nearly 200 people, 193 to be exact, most people believe that big business are more likely to be effective with price and technology, potentially value for money, but small business are more effective with creating safety, community contribution, internal policies, and customer experience and service. So this is where we match well. If we're a big business and we know that our customers do care about the community, but they believe small businesses can have be more effective at internal policies, maybe this is a weakness that we can capitalize on and then bridge the gap between one of our target audiences. All right, so magnifying Main Street, what we found, what it means, and what you should do. So originally we started about a decade ago with creating mobile, going from mobile friendly to mobile first platforms a decade ago. Today it's become digital first. So digital first, then live or person to person later. So digital first engagements are here, they're here to stay. If brands have not at this time adopted a digital first policy or digital first consumer experience, we would suggest that these brands look into creating something that's a digital touchpoint first, and then add the human to human aspect or two-way communication in person aspect a little later on. Additionally, Measuring omni-channel engagement. So this is somewhere where larger brands are often better at identifying metrics and KPIs, is combining multi-channels into a dashboard, identifying this variable, this KPI. This is an area where smaller businesses typically have challenges because smaller businesses, maybe they're 5 employees, 10 employees, or 50, typically don't have someone dedicated to creating a dashboard, monitoring their metrics and their KPIs, and identifying how omni-channel communication or omni-channel marketing is affecting their customer experience. So finding a way to measure omni-channel engagement, because customers don't want to, or most customers would prefer to be engaged with on multi-channels than just one. And we're more likely to convert with a customer and sustain loyalty over X period of time when we have omni-channel communication with a client as well. Additionally, if we can find those local influencers, those who would advocate for small businesses that are local, that advocate for Main Street. So every community has a local influencer. If that person can advocate for Main Street, we're more likely to see brands self-sustain over the next 2 to 3 years. All right, so let's look at alternative income products, or such known as the side hustle. The side hustle is here because most people want prestige, social status. We want security, comfort. And the item on the last in that list, although it's important, is additional income. Although additional income is important, it's security that we're looking for. So let's look at how the definition of gig workers has affected the outlook of who is being a gig worker or who is working multiple jobs. So in about 2 years ago, in May of 2018, the Federal Reserve definition states that 30% of people in our country or employed people were using a side hustle or a side gig to create additional income. By September 2020, just over 2 years later, that increased to 38%. But where the Federal Reserve definition misses the mark is that it excludes those who work multiple jobs, say part-time plus contract, or part-time, or contract plus contract. It misses the gap for those who work multiple side hustles or multiple gigs at one time. And that adds an additional 11%. So it's approximately 49% that are engaged in multiple jobs or multiple employment or gig working activities. And so what we found, what it means and what we should do, empowerment, security, and prestige. These three are what we found are the reasons why people want to engage in side hustles or the gig economy. And those three, empowerment, security, and prestige, equal to social status. Additionally, what it means is that we should embrace employee concerns. Employees are concerned about flexibility, having additional income, having a social status, or having some kind of prestige or recognition in what they do. Maybe somewhat of a instant gratification or near instant gratification for their projects. Although there's not an easy solution to this, what we would suggest is identify a way to increase prestige, increase flexibility, titles for your employees, as well as if your brand or organization has the ability to permit your employees to use side hustles or side gigs to create extra income, as long as they're not potentially competing with your own brand, that might be a good method to, a good policy to create to keep your employees happy, as well as maybe what some brands have done over the last two quarters is they've created side hustle projects that are part of the larger brand, but also give the employee additional income for actions taken on their own behalf on their own time. Right, and then let's talk about conservative overt consumption. We live our best lives on social media. We share things that we want other people to be jealous of or envy of. And so we like to have social status. Good segue in from the previous trend. But now with us in a recession, even though it is a recession by definition, it's not a traditional recession, and we're likely to bounce out of it quite soon. Although it's there because most people are not spending a lot of money or spending money on high ticket items. Most consumers are less likely to show their purchases on social media. So we'll take a few minutes on this chart because there is a lot here. So let's start with what we're looking at. Consumers with affluence and influence are most likely to curb their purchase-related social media posts. This is showing that we bought a new car, showing that we purchased a new home, showing that we've purchased a new furniture for our living room. And so what we're seeing here is that we have four categories, those that didn't want to appear insensitive to others or who are worse off financially, those who didn't want to appear insensitive or reckless, wouldn't have aligned with a more serious post in a feed, and then those who stop sharing content on social media that may signal financial distress. And then we have financial standing relative to personal circle, the generation of the user, and then tendency to make status signaling purchases. We could see some obvious trends. So in short, as we're digesting this slide from a participant's, digesting the slide that consisted of participants just over 1,300, is that most people are staying away from sharing their purchases on social media. So for brands who build upon user-generated content, we want our customers to show what they've done for social proof, for word of mouth, voice of the customer, to show that other people are buying it. Well, that's going to be a little more challenging over the next year or two, because we're a little we're semi-sensitive on what we want people to see and how they believe that we are spending or how responsible we're being, especially as we don't want to rub it in. So what we can do is we can ask our customers to share their testimonials, their experiences, their photos, their videos in a user-generated way, but more in a private setting, maybe a private message, and that information can be stored for a later date. What some brands are doing are they're collecting that user-generated content now, and they're asking the customer if they have permission to repost it at a later date. So let's say you wanted to leave a review for a company on their website. You submit your review, you submit your feedback, you even leave a photo. Some brands are asking their customers, we believe that this is a very important review. Do you mind if we post this on June 1st, 2021? And then if the customer agrees, it goes into a queue into waiting for June 1 or the selected date. And at that time, the post will post automatically, therefore giving some delayed reaction to the overconsumption. All right, so what we found, what it means, and what we should do. Although I probably just talked through a bunch of that on the last slide, I probably skipped ahead a little bit. We want to personalize as much of that content as possible. So going back to the user-generated portion, the user-generated content, if you can personalize a lot of the acquisition of UGC or user-generated content, that's a significant strategy going forward if the resources are there. Additionally, we would recommend that personalization for the request of use of UGC would be potentially one-on-one conversations, whether it be chatbot, automated, or even be a human-to-human interaction. We do suggest that it appears to the consumer on the customer-facing side that it is a one-on-one conversation. All right, so those are our top six consumer marketing trends for 2021. Just to recap what they were, being home-centric, having a hybrid lifestyle, employee leadership or employee advocation, magnifying Main Street, creating alternative income or the side hustle, and then overconsumption shared via social media or public-facing platforms. With that, we appreciate it. Look forward to seeing your success in 2021 and beyond.
Thanks for listening to ClickSuasion. Subscribe to the podcast, read our research, and get in touch with us at ClickSuasion.com. You can also find us on Twitter with the handle @ClickSuasion.